We'll argue about the, well, the microphone worked yesterday. Something happened to it. And I got a new one and a new cord, and I think it's okay. Without the microphone, you hear rustling of pages and on. It's probably me most of the time. So for people listening, I hope this comes out nice and clear. We did the second step proposition exercise yesterday. It's on the site under resources. It's changed my life. If you can come next Saturday, we're going to be doing the actual exercise itself and look at it. And people like Brian and all know that if you do that exercise, it'll really give you powerful ways to deal with fear all the time. On Wednesday night, we were on more about alcoholism, and we're going to be looking at, we did the covered through the first few pages, and we're going to be looking at the what's wrong with our mind. And up to that point, they talked about our body, and now we're going to talk about our mind and why we need God and why we need to work the steps, because without, that's the only solution to treating our mind. We talked yesterday about the narcissistic personality disorder. Sorry, but that's what we are. I read it, and it's wow. It says on the internet, untreatable. But we can treat it. It's where we think of ourselves, and in fact, I'll read it again. It was so powerful. I read it to my wife. I don't suggest you do that, because she said, well, yeah. I said, well, honey, I'm supposed to have changed. It says, a disorder in which a person has an inflated sense of self-importance. Anybody relate to that? Excessive need for admiration. Excessive. Disregard for others' feelings. Unable to handle any criticism. I like that one. And, of course, she criticized me, so I, you know, of course, it kicked right in, you know. And a sense of entitlement. And I think that defines alcoholism pretty well. And we don't have to be like that anymore. Isn't that great? We don't have to be that way. So tonight we're on two employers. And we covered the first part of the chapter last week. And we'll cover the second part tonight. And it's really, really, really good. I hadn't covered this for the first years of this study. I just did the chapter 7 and then went to Vision for You, because that was my old idea, right? And then I changed my mind, and we've gotten a lot out of it. We're on page 142.
Thank you.
And they're talking about how an employer looks at us, but really how a sponsor looks at the alcoholic, and how we look to other people and what we need to do if we want to get better. It says on the top of the page, you do not intend to lecture, moralize, or condemn, although we do sometimes, and we have to watch for that. We don't do it intentionally. We do it sometimes out of frustration. If possible, express a lack of hard feeling towards him, especially someone who's come back. At this point, it might be well to explain alcoholism, and they're talking about how you've read the book. Say that you believe he is a gravely ill person with this qualification. Perhaps being fatally ill, does he want to get well? It's a good question, isn't it? Yeah. Dr. Bob would ask him, are you done for good? And you know, we talk about, we'll just stay sober today. But Dr. Bob would ask him, are you done for good, forever? Remember, there can't be any lurking notion that someday, somehow, we'll be able to drink like other people. You ask because many alcoholics, being warped in drugs, do not want to quit. And if they don't want to quit, there's nothing we can do. But does he? Will he take every necessary step? And what are the necessary steps? To me, they're all the directions in the first 102 pages of this book. Submit to anything to get well, to stop drinking forever. I think we talk about that on page 58. Are we willing to go to any length? Are we willing to do everything we can? And I wrote, completely defeated. If he says yes, does he really mean it? Or down inside, does he think he's fooling you? And that after rest and treatment, he'll be able to get away with a few drinks. I think it's very hard to tell what an alcoholic's really feeling. The only way you could tell is by what they do. And I know I'm looking at Brian, but he's working with a lot of new people. And they can tell you all sorts of stuff, but then you have to see what they're going to do. Brian works with people who are new and trying to get them help. When you mention this book, now this book is their answer to the problem of alcoholism. They don't talk about going to meetings in the book. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But now we have a meeting AA, and we've gotten away from program AA. That's my observation, and I could be wrong. And if you're listening, you don't agree with it, don't get mad. But I think we've gotten away from being completely devoted to the directions in the book. It's a matter, if he temporizes and still thinks he can ever, because remember, it's the only suggestion AA has. Remember, the book is called Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't worship the book, but it's a treasure map to the treasure. It's like, to us, it's our book of salvation. If he temporizes and still thinks he can never drink again, even beer, he might as well be discharged after the next bender, which if an alcoholic is almost certainly had. Now, they're talking about firing them, but, you know, if you're sponsoring somebody just because they relapse doesn't mean that you should give up on them. Remember, we're going to read about Jim, and they went to Jim many times. But then you have to figure out when they're really ready to do this. He should understand that emphatically. Either you are dealing with a man who can and will get well, or you are not. And the ones who can, who cannot and will not, are those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Now, we read that every meeting. For a long time, I wondered what it meant. Well, all it really means, as I see it, can the alcoholic see his true predicament? Can he see his hopeless condition of mind and body? Can he see that he's going to go on to an alcoholic death or die, or insanity or a spiritual life? And some people just can't see it. They think it's bad, but they can't. It's not that bad. Or it's bad, but it gets better quickly in their mind. He should, because really there's no one who really can't do this. There really is no one who cannot do this simple program. If not, why waste time with him? This may be severe, but is usually the best course. If we give people undue attention, really not trying to get well, one, it frustrates us, two, it doesn't help them at all. And it takes us away from people who could use it. After satisfying, and then you have to ask yourself, why do you keep trying to work with someone who doesn't want to do what you ask them? And then that's a character defect in itself. You know, you want to be a people pleaser. You want them to like you. Wanting your sponsee to like you can be a death sentence for the sponsee, really. We don't want to, we're not interested in friendship. We're interested in helping and showing the path. After satisfying yourself that your man wants to recover and that he will go to any extreme to do so, you may suggest a definite course of action. The reason I said it may be a death sentence is because they need to know the truth as it is. And you can help see the truth, their truth. And if you try not to do that, you just want to make them feel good, nothing's going to change. This is a serious disease. After satisfying yourself that the man wants to recover, go to the extreme to do so, you may suggest a definite course of action. Well, we have a chapter called Into Action. Isn't that interesting? It's not into thinking. It's into action, and it follows how it works. And how it works gives us the information, step 3 and step 4, to take the action of step 5, right? And then 6, 7, 8, 9, so you can get to step 10. Phil, we're on page 142, buddy.
Okay. Thank you.
And then yesterday, Greg said something really good. He said that he realized that you can't work a step properly if you haven't worked the step before 100%. And I try to get people to get in step 10 so they can live each day, right, in the world of the spirit. You can't do that if you haven't done 1 through 9. And then I think it all boils down, the people who are doing step 4 haven't done step 1 yet. And step 1 has to be done every morning. It has to be done every day. They admit that you need help. For most alcoholics who are drinking who were just getting over a spree, and here they talk about some treatment is helpful, and detox especially, because alcoholics can die of DTs. Drug addicts want to die, but they don't. It's not fatal. I guess some Valium addictions, you can have seizures, but it's not fatal. But DTs, you can die. You can seize, you can have heart failure. It's very dangerous. But they have good treatment for that now, and it doesn't take very long, a week or so. So they say, thoroughly clear mind and body of the effects of alcohol. Incompetent hand, it seldom takes long. It says he can think better if he's straight, no longer craves alcohol. And remember, the craving for alcohol is if it's still in your body. And so there's a period of time when that has to get out of your body. And they even talk about paying for their treatment. And they used to pay, the sponsor in the old days would pay for the hospitalization. That's what sponsor was. Sponsor meant that you sponsored them to go to the meetings, the Oxford group. And in Akron, it meant you helped pay for their hospitalization. It was $50, which was a lot of money in those days. And they stayed about, they had a 6-day, Dr. Bob had a 6 or 7 day treatment, and then they left. If a man accepts your offer, it should be pointed out the physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. Though you're providing him with the best possible medical attention, and this is good, he should understand. So we hope we may help people understand that we have to undergo a change of heart, not mind. Because we can change our mind all the time, but it has to be deep down inside of us, a change of heart. And look at this, to get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. So we don't have to be that narcissistic personality disorder. We don't have to be wanting approval all the time. We don't have to have an inflated sense of self-importance. And why? Because we want to be of service to God and others. That's how, and we work for God now. We all had to place recovery above everything. For without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. And I see people who aren't here tonight, I haven't seen them for a while, and they've gotten very busy. I've worked with them, I sat in the back room with them, and they tell me they're great, but they're busy. They're working too hard, they can't get here. And so, well, I don't know whether that's good or bad, I just always worry about them. I think once you lose your disconnect from going to any meetings at all, I think that's a bad sign. Because they always had time to drink. I mean, they always had an hour a week, right? Anybody ever not have an hour a week to drink or use? Did you ever call? Did you ever take the booze back and say you're too busy? I'm too busy. I bought too much. I'm busy this week. Here, take this back. Yeah, I don't need the pills. I don't have time. Yeah, I think we hit a home run with that one. I'm in a good mood. Of course, it's early. Talk to me at 10:30 after the Chiefs lose. To return to the subject matter of this book, it contains full suggestions by which the employee may solve his problem. Anybody agree with that? Absolutely. To use some of the ideas, now he's talking to the people who's reading it, it contains are novel. Perhaps you're not quite in sympathy with the approach we suggest. And I'm at the top of 144. By no means do we offer it as the last word of the subject. It isn't. But so far as we're concerned, it has worked with us. Isn't that what a testament is? Isn't that what the New Testament is? It's a testament of what they saw, heard, and experienced. And you can't argue with it. And you can't argue with this book. And that's why it's so powerful. It says, whether your employee likes it or not, he will learn the grim truth about alcoholism. That won't hurt him a bit, even though he does not go for this remedy. And Susie was talking yesterday about, she used to get upset when I said the alcoholic will drink again. But it's true, isn't it? That's, we're alcoholics. We will drink again without the steps, without God. We have no power. I think an alcoholic can go a long time sober without drinking, but they don't have emotional sobriety, and at some point they may drink again. But we want sobriety with emotional sobriety, right? We want to be happy, joyous, and free. We want to be able to have not be in conflict with everyone and everything. It says, and I like this, we suggest you draw the book to the attention of the doctor who's to tend your patient during treatment. Now, I studied a lot of nonsense in medical school. You know, they had it in the first year, everybody had their little thing that they wanted us to read and do. Why can't they give a copy of the big book to every medical student and have somebody come and talk for 3 hours about the steps? I mean, really. I mean, it's one of the major health problems in the United States. Maybe that's something I'll suggest. If the book is read the moment the patient is able, while acutely depressed, realization of his condition may come to him. Now remember, we were reading more about alcoholism so people can understand their illness. Doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there's a solution, right? And it was meant to be read so that you would understand the hopelessness of your condition, so you'll work the steps. We hope the doctor will tell the patient truth about his condition, whatever it happens to be. Now they all tell him not to drink, right? But they don't tell him that you're powerless to do that. Now they send them here because they know this is good and it gives them something, someplace to go. They send them there and that's good. Gets them out of the office, gets them out of the hospital. But just telling them that they're not going to drink and then the patient always says they're not going to drink, they're done. That isn't the solution. But if they send them here, that's a good thing, and they do that usually. They send them here to treatment. Most businesses have a plan on how to help people, and it's changed. AA's respected, the program's respected. When this man is presented with his volume, it is best that no one tell him he must abide by its suggestions. The man must decide for himself. Now, I don't always do that. I tell him, you need to do this. You know, you must do this. But, you know, that's because I was a caretaker and I want him to get better. But really, they have to decide for themselves. Most of the times, and people may have had this experience, they'll come for a while and then they kind of shy away from me and doing this. I don't take it personally. The man must decide for himself, but always reach out and say, if you ever need to talk or do anything, just give me a call. We're here. You're betting, of course, that your changed attitude plus the contents of this book will turn the trick. In some cases it will, in others it may not. As our work spreads and our numbers increase, we hope employees will be put in contact with some of us. Meanwhile, we are sure a great deal can be accomplished by the use of the book alone. See, they thought you could get this book and you could read it and you would do it and then you would take somebody else through it. I think it's possible to do that, but it's hard. It's not an easy book. It's like the scriptures. I'm looking at Norm, the book has to be understood. And I'm trying to study scripture, and when people teach it to me, it makes more sense just reading it. One of the reasons we have this meeting, when your employees return, talk with him. Ask him if he thinks he has the answer. And I would ask, do you have the answer? Somebody asked you. In the next paragraph, they talk about how if they come back, they may tell you, if you work for them, that they stole money and they did this and that. And in fact, he may say almost anything if he's accepted our solution, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. And I wrote, that's the beginning of amends. I think the best thing you could do is try to be a better employee, right? And a better husband or wife or father or son or AA member. Just be better. Be change the way you act. And then they talk about, if he speaks of his home situation, the second paragraph, you can give helpful suggestions. But then here comes something that hits you right behind, right between the eyes. The greatest enemies of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. Now, they could have put a few others in there, but I think it covers it, right? Anger, fear, jealousy, envy, frustration. We get agitated and doubtful, right, John? And we get irritable, restless, and discontented. And the big book talks about we watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Why are they our enemies? Because when we have those feelings, I'm separated from God. I have no power. I'm back in my personality disorder. I'm running the show. And things don't go well. And if I bring any of those feelings into an interaction, I get it back. And then you'll leave the interaction, you'll say, wow, they were really ugly, you know? Well, we don't see ourselves sometimes. But if we bring love in every situation, remember, we get it back. And I have to remember that. If I'm in a situation, I'm starting to get a little agitated or doubtful or whatever, I say, you know, I'm not bringing love into this, and I need to stop and bring love into this, Michael. Because, you know, I don't like to feel bad anymore about my behavior. I don't want to have to, at night, say, gee, why did I do that? I'm going to skip the bottom. Oh, I love this. See if this describes AA. Wherever men are gathered together in business, there will be rivalries. And arising out of these, a certain amount of office politics. Sometimes we see alcoholics have an idea that people are trying to pull us down. Often this is not so at all, but sometimes our drinking will be used politically. And you know, AA, when we start running like a business and all, you know, some people get upset and they don't like what this one's doing, and then they have conflict. And I think that's true whenever human beings get together, isn't it? We haven't had a business meeting for a while. I think that's why we're all getting along. We all get along, don't we? Yeah. Our business meetings usually only take 3 or 4 minutes. And as a class, alcoholics are energetic people. They work hard, they play hard. Your man should be on his mettle to make good. Being somewhat weakened and faced with physical and mental readjustment to a life which knows no alcohol, 146, top of the page, sorry. And so we are energetic people and we want to do good, right? So we may overdo. You may have to curb his desire to work 16 hours a day. You can become a workaholic, right? And you can take one addiction for the other. He may wish to do a lot for alcoholics, and something of the sort may keep him up during business hours. A reasonable amount of latitude will be helpful. This work is necessary to maintain his sobriety. And then we'll skip the next one. And then the bottom paragraph, skip the next paragraph. Your man may be trusted. I think that's true, but trust has to be earned. And I've heard people say the best way to earn trust is to change your actions and your attitude. Long experience with alcoholic excuses naturally arouse suspicion. When his wife calls saying he's sick, you may jump to the conclusion that he's drunk. If he is and is still trying to recover, he will tell you about it even if it means the loss of a job. For he knows he must be honest if he would live at all. And I wrote, trust has to be earned by your actions, and all actions born in thought. So we have to change our thinking if we're going to change our actions. On 147, if he is conscientiously following the program of recovery, he can go anywhere your business may call him. That's in the big book, right, in Working with Others, step 12. Remember, you can go anywhere as long as your motives are good, right? And you can go anywhere if you're in what kind of condition? Fit spiritual condition. And it means you don't have an alcoholic mind. And Stu said the other day, he's recovered because he's not obsessed with alcohol each day. And that's all recovered means, that we're not thinking about drinking all the time anymore. And it doesn't dominate us. We're not waiting for 5 o'clock or something, or we're not fighting it all the time. Next paragraph, there's another thing you might wish to do. If your organization is a large one, your junior executives might be provided with this book. If you look up the review of the big book in Amazon, somebody said that they expect in 100 years everybody will be reading this book and studying this book, but I don't know. Maybe not. It's a powerful spiritual book. I think it really helps. I'm studying the scriptures intensely, and my 12-step work in the studying the big book really helps me see the power of the scriptures. It's all entwined. Then he says, if you have a junior executive, you have somebody who's ill, you said, look here, Ed, do you want to stop drinking or not? You put me on the spot every time you get drunk. It isn't fair to me or the firm. I've been learning something about alcoholism. If you're an alcoholic, you're a mighty sick man. You act like one. The firm wants to help you get over it, and if you're interested, there is a way out. And remember, they were going to call this The Way Out, but there were a lot of way out books. And it doesn't say in the scripture somewhere that this is the way out? The way? Didn't they call it the way? Early, and the early Christians called themselves the way, right? Yeah. If you take it, your past will be forgotten. I wrote, do you believe your past has been forgiven by God? Do you believe that? I believe it, but still I regret the things I did. Anybody else regret some of the things you did?
Yes.
No, John doesn't, but everybody else does. But if you cannot or will not, if you cannot or will not stop drinking, I think you ought to resign. Now, I notice a lot of people come in here now, they're really beaten down. A lot of people have lost their jobs. You know, things are pretty bad shape, especially when drugs are involved. It's really hard. And so we have people that really, really need help quickly. It boils right down to this. No man should be fired, second paragraph, just because he is an alcoholic. If he wants to stop, he should be afforded a real chance. I'm going to skip the next three paragraphs, and I'm going to go to 149, the middle. Those three paragraphs talk about your job and people and how much it costs an employee to employ alcoholics and how much damage we can do in terms of their business success. It says, of course, this chapter refers to alcoholics, sick people, deranged men. That's the way we look. What our friend, the vice president, had in mind was the habitual or whoopee drinker. As to them, his policy, and he was said, this is the kind of person that you could stop without all this treatment and all this help. But he did not distinguish between such people and the alcoholic. Remember, they talk about the hard drinker, that if given a sufficient reason, the hard drinker can quit. And we're given a lot of sufficient reasons, and we don't quit. I said it talks about the alcoholic employee in the next paragraph. The right kind of man, the kind who recovers, will not want a disproportionate amount of time and attention. He will not impose. He will work like the devil and thank you to his dying day. And, you know, I still owe a lot to Sister. You know, she was really kind to me. And I remember crying and she helped me and my life changed. That was a long time ago. She was a really powerful Christian woman. Today I own a little company. There are 2 alcoholic employees who produce as much as 5 normal salesmen, but why not? They have a new attitude and they have been saved from a living death. I have enjoyed every moment spent in getting them straightened out. And I think when tonight it's coming up to Christmas, that time of year, but we look around the room, everybody think about your circumstances and where you were at that moment of defeat. And then think about all the people that helped you, all the people that were there for you, the Eskimos that God put in your life. You know the Eskimo story? Mm-mm. I've told it a million times. You don't want to hear it again? No.
Here's the bottle of scotch.
The priest and is in a bar in Nome, Alaska, and he's drinking with this trader. And the trader looks at the priest. He says, "You know, I've proved there's no God." He says, "Really?" He says, "Yeah, I'm an atheist. I know there's no God." He says, and it's been proven to me. He says, "Well, how'd that happen? Tell me about it." He says, "Well, I had to go drive these trade goods down, and I got in a blizzard, and I got lost, and I couldn't see anything, and I didn't know where I was going, and I thought I was going to die. So I got down on my knees, and I said, 'God, if you're there, save me.'" So the priest says, "Well, you're here." He says, "Oh, an Eskimo came and saved me." But there are a lot of Eskimos, some in this room, for me, that helped us. And I think we should remember that. Anyway, I blabbered enough. I was in a good mood today, so I don't know if I should put this one out or not. But anyway, have a great Christmas, everybody. Thank you.